Hello, and welcome to PodCatalyst, a podcast dedicated to emerging trends and thought leadership within the communications profession. I'm Peter Finn, Executive Director of the International Association of Business Communicators, or IABC. For this PodCatalyst interview, I had the pleasure of speaking with Kim Blanchett, Darren Wojcik, and Jocelyn Forsma. They received the 2021 Gold Quill Award of Excellence on behalf of Argyle PR and the National Association of Friendship Centers, or NAFC, for their campaign, Take Care in COVID, COVID-19 Communications for Urban Indigenous Peoples. For those that are not familiar with friendship centers, they facilitate Indigenous peoples' transitions from rural, remote, and reserve life to Canada's cities. They are the first point of contact to connect many people to culturally based socioeconomic programs and services. During the pandemic, this was more urgent than ever, given the higher risk and impact of COVID-19 on Indigenous people. The Take Care in COVID campaign generated significant news and social media impact, helping National Association of Friendship Centers, or NAFC, make a vital, trusted contribution to Indigenous people's health at a critical time. A little bit about Jocelyn, Kim, and Darren. Jocelyn is the Executive Director of the National Association of Friendship Centers. Jocelyn has over 19 years of work and volunteer experience building strong relationships and advocacy on behalf of Indigenous peoples. As Executive Director of the NAFC, Jocelyn brings her legal training and passion for access to justice to her work with Indigenous people in urban environments and the Friendship Center movement towards innovative, positive, and effective systematic change for Indigenous peoples. She is a member of the Moose Cree First Nation in Northern Ontario. Kim Blanchett leads Argyle PR's Western Canadian team of engagement, public relations, and public health communicators, providing clients with over 25 years of experience in these ever-changing practices. And finally, Darren Wojcik is a core part of Argyle's internal creative team, playing a role in the vast majority of their audio and video projects. And it was a great pleasure to speak with them. Such an innovative campaign and really truly inspiring work. So there you go. I am speaking with Kim, Darren, and Jocelyn today from the National Association of Friendship Centers in Canada. And they were awarded the Gold Quill Award of Excellence for their Take Care in COVID campaign. But before we dive into some details about the campaign, could each of you just tell me a little bit about yourselves, how you got into the profession? And that would be great.
Sure. My name is Jocelyn Forsma. I'm the Executive Director of the National Association of Friendship Centers. So the National Association of Friendship Centers is a national office with over 100 members at the local and provincial territorial levels. We have friendship centers in every region in Canada from coast to coast to coast. And essentially, our role is to provide culturally relevant and safer support services programs for Indigenous peoples living in urban settings. And the initiative that we launched was in response to the COVID-19 pandemic, and in particular, some culturally relevant messaging that we needed and wanted to see for the our total population is somewhere over 1 million, and a vast majority of those are living in urban centers for Indigenous peoples. And we just wanted messaging that really spoke to them in particular during COVID and provided trusted information from sources that they know and trust at the community level. So we hired Argyle to help us with some of the messaging. So we knew what messages we wanted to give, and we asked Argyle to help us really package that messaging and share it with a broader audience.
Great. Maybe I'll pick it up here. Yeah. Kim Blanchett. I'm Senior Vice President for Argyle in Western Canada. And, you know, Argyle has really grown. We're one of Canada's fastest growing management-owned public relations firms. We're a full service firm where we do everything from deep public engagement on matters that, you know, impact policy decision making, connecting governments and organizations with the people impacted by the decision they make, moving into a lot of social change, behavioral communications. So do a lot of work in communities around harm reduction, tobacco cessation, harm reduction around alcohol, do a lot of work in Canada's northern communities, and just public health communications in general. general. And then we also have those, you know, those more traditional communications, brand, creative, reputational work, a lot of the strategic communications and corporate communications. So we currently have well over 120 professionals in 7 locations across Canada. And last spring opened our Washington, D.C. office, which specializes in crisis and litigation communications as well. So for us, you know, I spent my career in public service communications, working for federal and provincial governments across Canada, and then joined Argyle 2 years ago. You know, after a 30-year career in public service, thought, why not jump into consulting just before a global pandemic? See if that would be fun. So we were super excited about the opportunity that the National Association of Friendship Centers had to really step into a place that was becoming filled with misinformation. Not something I think that is unique to Canada or unique to the Indigenous community, but I think the NAFC had a very unique relationship that allowed them to really position themselves as that trusted source of information and that place to go where you weren't sure what you could trust. And I'll turn it over to Darren.
I'm Darren Wojcik. I'm a writer-producer with the Argyle. I've been with the company in some fashion for about 17 years. So the gray, I think, is pretty telling of that, the gray-haired beard here. In that time, I've had the opportunity to work primarily, I would say, in the harm reduction and in the social change arenas, but pretty much work on whatever is required. And I've had the opportunity to work on some amazing things right across the country, including Take Care in COVID. That was a real pleasure to work on.
Thank you all for the introduction. Learning a little bit about the campaign, I'm just really curious to hear about the planning process. And, you know, I know, Darren, you're the creative involved, but just, you know, how did this, from the initial idea generation to the execution, was it like in terms of the collaboration between Argyle and NAFC?
So we initially had, if you can imagine, I mean, a year ago seems like a lot more than a year ago, but just over a year ago, I was working on how do we respond to this COVID. There was a lot of unknowns at the time. The science was really new and people were just trying to figure it out. And as part of figuring it out, there was a lot of misinformation out there, and a lot of the information that was rolling out really wasn't culturally relevant or culturally specific. And if it was, it was more directed towards, say, like a First Nations on reserve kind of audience. And so in our role in providing programs and services to Indigenous people in urban settings, we really wanted to fill a gap in knowledge and a trusted source for information for Indigenous people who are living in urban settings. I don't have a public health background. My background is in law, and nobody on my team had a public health background. And here we are being expected to provide information and guidance in the middle of a global pandemic. And I got a really fateful email from one Dr. Janet Smiley, who's a Métis physician in Toronto and is well respected within Indigenous communities, has a long time working with urban Indigenous communities. And she said, what can we do together? And I was so grateful for her to reach out. And we decided, okay, we think it's important for us to share information. People trust friendship centers. They turn to them for all kinds of things, and they're turning to them now. And we know the kinds of messages that we want to get out, but we don't really know how to do it, the modality of it. So Janet had actually suggested working with Argyle through a contact, a mutual contact that we had. And so we worked with Argyle on a number of information pieces. So there was some information sheets that we did with Well Living House that were developed by an Indigenous physician. And so she knew the targeting of the messaging, what it needed to be. We did a series of ads with an Anishinaabe comedian, Ryan McMahon, who was well known in Indigenous communities, but also really knew friendship centers really well. And then we did a series of webinars as well, all featuring myself and Janet Smiley. And the reason why we did it this way is in Indigenous cultures, there's this notion of extended family members being very important for people's development and sources of information. And we kind of colloquially use this term of aunties, right? Like we want it to be seen as sort of aunties providing information to community members. So we had these series of aunties talks, and we had elders come on and talk about how people can kind of take care of themselves in traditional ways while still respecting COVID distancing protocols. And what are some basics that we need to know? What are some things we can and cannot do that just wouldn't really resonate with a non-Indigenous audience? And we know that our people are really, we really like humor, and we use humor in a lot of different ways to get messages across. And we found that a lot of the COVID ads at the time, very serious, very, very important. But we wanted to try something a little bit different. So we tried a series of ads that were actually funny, and hoping that that was something that people were going to want to open and want to listen to, but also that the information provided was backed up by science and by the best knowledge that we had at the time provided to us by an Indigenous physician. And then we talked to Argyle, and Argyle really helped us put the ads together and get that information out there. So I don't know if Argyle wants to talk a little bit about some of the numbers and how we got like the idea to actually people viewing the ads and seeing the posts.
Absolutely. And I think I'll let Darren talk about the creative ideation side of it. But, you know, as you can see, I mean, coming to the table with a partner like the NAFC, they knew their audiences, that, you know, inside and out. They knew who they needed to reach, and they knew the challenges. And we were doing this, you know, it's an age cliche, but, you know, building the plane as you're flying. We're doing this in the real time, day-to-day changing information of COVID and what's real and what people can trust. So it was, you know, even for us to be able to wade through that information. But I think what we were able to really take the deep information that Jocelyn and her team was able to provide us and do our own data. You know, do our digging into, you know, what are the specific channels and the media habits and usages that are really going to help us be impactful. This was not a giant multi-million dollar budgeted campaign. We had to be very smart with the targeting, using, you know, that leveraging the organic and limited paid digital with, you know, earned media, which we knew would get specific attention because what we were seeing, and I think one of the issues that brought Jocelyn forward is a lot of the government communications and support at the time was really directed at Indigenous communities on reserve. And we really felt there was a gap there with the urban Indigenous population. So I think our ability to just walk through that strategic planning, really understanding, you know, who do we need to reach? Where are they? What are their unique circumstances? And how can we get that information to them as quickly as possible and as impactfully as possible? And so maybe I'll turn it over for Darren just to talk about that creative journey and what led us to the campaign with Ryan.
Well, Jocelyn mentioned, you know, we had the opportunity to work with Ryan McMahon. I actually came in early on in the discussions with Ryan, and that and he was, you could tell immediately, he was very passionate about both Friendship Centers and the project itself. So it was really exciting to get to have an opportunity to work with somebody who is that passionate about what you're doing. We also wanted to make sure that we didn't limit his voice in any way. So we wanted to make sure that the ads, because he's a comedian, we wanted to make sure that they were in line with his voice and his comedy. So we kind of approached it a little more loose than we often do. We had sort of the factoid that we wanted to address and the myth that we wanted to address, but how it was addressed was very much up to him. So what he would do is he would shoot his own parts and then I would edit them together after I got them. And it was just really fun to see what he was going to come up with and then fitting it all together. But it was also trying to find that balance again between the humor and pointing out some of the absurdities of some of the misinformation and myths that were going around. And there were some pretty wild ones. I mean, there still is. But as Jocelyn said, this was pretty early on. So there was not as many, there just wasn't the same kind of awareness of things that there is now. People weren't sure what to believe and who to go to. That's why it was so great that Friendship Centers was stepping in, because they are somebody who is trusted within the communities. So we had to find that nice balance between delivering that fact and then pointing out sort of the absurdity of some of the myths that were going around. And I think Ryan really struck that balance well and gave us a lot to work with.
And especially throughout the last several months and over a year, I mean, things have certainly been fluid in the sense that a lot of new information. Did the campaign kind of evolve to factor in as new information was becoming available, there was more science that was available. Is that something that was kind of factored into the campaign as it was moving along?
Absolutely. And actually, that was a big challenge with the campaign, was because the messaging and what people needed to hear kept changing, right? So from one week to the next, this was the issue that we had to respond to. So I think that's why it was important for us to do all the different components of the campaign. It wasn't just one thing, right? So we had the ads, which I think they still stand up today, but the webinars, we really use that as the opportunity to kind of pick up on the conversations that were happening. And we had them at different points in time over several months. And so at the beginning of the campaign, you know, we really focused that first webinar on just, here are the basics. And like, why should I wear a mask? Like, that was kind of the question at the time, right? It wasn't mandatory. When we first had that, it wasn't mandatory for people to wear masks. And so we just did a one-on-one on what a mask does, what it doesn't do. And then as we started hearing more from our communities about, well, it's really important for us to take care of our other aspects of health, such as our spiritual health and cultural health, like, to what extent can we participate in our traditional ceremonies, and how do we navigate that while the risks are still out there? So we didn't think that we were the best people to speak to that, but we created the forum to hear from a number of different knowledge keepers that could share what people could do, basically gave some guidance and clout to what we were saying, like, this is serious. Yes, it's important to maintain your culture, but here are some ways that you can do it in a way that reduces risk for everybody involved. So yeah, that was the hardest part, was just kind of keeping up with the information as it was coming out and putting out good information. And I look back at the campaign and I'm really happy that everything that we put out is still stands up. Like, nothing, it is really old information that the science changed on that. It was just sort of an evolution. So I'm really proud that, you know, we got things as good as we could in the time, especially considering there was so much new information coming out, it seemed like every week.
And that was such a pivotal part of that campaign. You know, it's great to get the impressions, it's great to get the eyes on the ads, but we really wanted to drive people to the NAFC for that source of information. So whether it was participating in the webinars or, you know, driving, I think we had 77,000 unique visits to the website, that COVID-19 resources page, people going back and looking at those videos and those webinars and sharing them, and the level of engagement within the community, which, you know, really was what ultimately we wanted. It was great to have eye-catching campaign, funny commercials. They're great. That's a nice feather in your cap, but it all comes down to delivering on those objectives. Are we raising awareness with this community? Are we driving them to that one source of information where they know it's trusted, and knowing that what they're sharing actually helps diminish some of the misinformation that was out there, because they're sharing trusted, evidence-based information.
And beyond the information, I mean, we were also, I think, providing some real practical things that people could do. And I think that's the other reason that they do stand up so well, is that those fundamentals really haven't changed. And we were very fortunate, and that sort of became a foundation for a lot of the messages, was to work within those foundations and apply them to different situations.
And just in terms of impact, which I know is always very difficult to measure, are there, and I think Kim, you kind of spoke to a little bit, you know, traffic on the website, were there other things that came out that where you could really see the impact of the campaign? You know, just how did you receive some of that feedback?
I think early on when we noticed the click-through rate, I mean, the click-through rate was at 1.45%. It was low, the costs were dropping because we were getting that level of engagement. But I also think it was, you know, the people that were actually joining the Facebook page, you know, 469 yep. new Facebook followers, people that were saying, oh, okay, this is something I'm going to follow longer term, and the sharing of the information. I think another piece for us really was getting the media coverage in a space where it was 24/7 COVID. It was, you know, really, really difficult to get into that space, but really, being able to capitalize on the story that we were trying to tell, the people were reaching and getting, you know, really solid media interest at a time where, you know, we really knew that was going to be a huge challenge, and a challenge to have something that was not, to Jocelyn's point, the doom and gloom, let's scare you into following the rules, something that, you know, had a sense of humor to it, but also had that serious science-based evidence behind it. So I think, you know, for me, it's great to get those numbers that you can post, but that real engagement, the fact that people really did go to the NAFC for that information, I think was ultimately what we wanted to achieve. And we were excited we were able to do that.
Do you think that there are some takeaways from the development of the campaign from both sides, whether it be Argyle or NAFC, that will inform future campaigns as you move along? And you know, any things that you kind of took away that might be applied or are also useful for the folks that are just listening to this?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, we kind of indicated in our submission that humor is always a challenge. and it's, you know, it's a risk. So it's one you really have to work with a partner that understands their audience and understands what will fly and listen to your client. I think, you know, some of the humor not coming from an Indigenous culture and an Indigenous lens, I think had I just seen that, I might've gone, oh, really? Oh, that's pushing a boundary. But, you know, your client knows and being able to understand that, no, there's a risk you can take because they know their audience and, you know, you're a strategic and a technical facilitator being able to bring these messages to those audiences. And I think, you know, we learned so much about that. And you get excited sometimes as practitioners and you get excited with your strategic plan and your critical path. And sometimes, you know, you forget to stop and listen. But I think, you know, Jocelyn and Dr. Smiley and Ryan, they were just so generous with their time and their wisdom and their experience to be able to insert and really help craft a campaign that spoke to the audiences we were trying to reach.
Yeah, I think that was a big component of the post campaign was we actually did a really detailed debriefing with the Argyle team and NAFC team. And so I learned a lot about managing a big campaign. I think the day of our campaign, I went into like interviews for a new manager at my office. And so all of these media requests were coming in and looking back, I'm like, well, yeah, of course they needed my time. It wasn't just like, okay, you take the campaign and run away with it. We had to be very hands-on throughout the campaign. And I don't think that was something that I really anticipated as a client. It was kind of like, okay, I give you the money, you do the thing, and then, you know, you tell us how it went. But we really had to be engaged step by step the whole way through. I was kind of laughing a little bit around the humor piece because I think we did know exactly how far we could go with some of them. And some we were like, yeah, that's funny. That's great. There's one of the ads that features Ryan doing a hand drum song, which non-Indigenous client on their own may have been like, well, no, that's not appropriate. Or is it appropriate? We don't know. We thought it was hilarious. We thought it was great. But then we did another ad that we actually ended up pulling because it wasn't the right forum. We thought the messaging was still good within it, but we realized it wasn't the right forum to have that conversation. And so we ended up pulling it back just in favor of doing the dialogue with the knowledge keepers because we thought that they were a much better messenger for what we wanted to share than doing it in a way. We still thought it was funny, but we knew that our community members would have thought perhaps that we were making light of culture in a way that we didn't really intend. So yeah, those were some of the lessons learned. We also found there's a lot of nuance and there's a lot of, I guess, context that we bring as an Indigenous partner that we found we really had to work closely with Argyle to ensure that they got that piece right. It would not have served anybody. It would not have served us if the campaign did not look like it was done by and for Indigenous people. That was really, really crucial. So anybody who's working with an Indigenous community, communities of color, and thankfully Argyle's approach was to listen, was to let us lead, especially in those messenger pieces. And that really helped contribute to the success that we didn't feel like we had to fight with them to say like, no, it has to say it like this, not like this, because that's what our communities are going to be expecting. But I also really appreciate that we were able to do it in a way that was very high quality, which again, it was for us a challenge to even decide whether or not to go through with the campaign because from our perspective as frontline service providers, do we invest in a communications campaign or do we roll those funds out to the community directly for food security, for shelter, for direct COVID supports, right? And it was a bit of a risk on our part and one that we felt very strongly like, no, people need information that they can trust from sources that they can trust. And this is worth investing in. So those were really hard decisions that we had to make at the time. And thankfully, I can say that we feel confident and good about that decision, but it was a calculated risk on our part as to whether or not we wanted to invest it in the first place.
I know it sounds like you also had a relatively lean budget as well. So that was a challenge going into this. Yeah. And Jocelyn, are there...
It was probably lean for Argyle. For us, we were like, whoa, this is, you know, it's a not-for-profit that, like, we don't have, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to put towards communications. Like, I had one person, like, my had one full-time staff, and that was already a big deal because the year before, I didn't have anybody. Yep. So it like, yeah, it was very significant for us to spend money on a communications campaign, which from their perspective might have been lean. From ours, we were like, that was the max.
Curious, in some of the other work that you've done, Jocelyn, do you typically, is humor sort of a, I mean, I think you mentioned before, that's the way of connecting, but is that something that you use in a lot of your marketing materials and just general communications? Is that a constant?
I think we're paving our own way in that respect and always trying to find that balance between where humor is appreciated and welcome and where it can come off as glib or sort of disrespectful. But yeah, I mean, for anybody who knows and works with Indigenous communities, we laugh at everything and anything. And some people might look at it and be like, oh my God, you know, but I think it's just part of our way of demonstrating our resilience and demonstrating the way that we've managed to survive this far and not only just survive, but thrive in our communities. So yeah, it's really important for us. It is a part of our culture and how we do approach messaging.
Was this the first time that Argyle and NAFC had worked together? Or okay, so this was a brand new...
Well, this is the first time that we worked together. It's the first time, I think, for myself to actually engage the services of an external public relations company. So there was a lot of learning on our side.
Yeah, but it certainly speaks to all the people involved being able to produce this award-winning campaign and have this impact. And it's the first time you all worked together. That's amazing. I just had a couple questions, or really one question for Darren and Kim. And I know, Kim, you were involved in the Gold Quill process. Any advice for folks, you know, with the next round of Gold Quill submissions of those that are thinking about it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have to say, I've learned more from my Gold Quill failures, and there have been many. I think in terms of, you know, the feedback I've received over the years, yeah, it helped me write better award submissions, but I would argue it made me a better communicator. Calling out gaps in the objectives we set and our ability to measure them and our ability to actually put tactics in place that achieve those objectives. And I think the quality of the judging has led me to move away from, this was something cool we did, I'm going to submit it to an award, to something like the NAFC, where it was, we set out to accomplish something in partnership with the client, and we were able to do that. And I think that to me is just that marker of a project or an initiative or a campaign that really does warrant submission. So I think for me, I think it is understanding what you're going to do, having those objectives. And that is where, you know, we have draft submissions that never get finished because, you know, we fail to make that really strong link between what is it that your client wants to achieve and needs to achieve and to reach. And then how are you really pulling together your research, your insight, your knowledge of those audiences to then pull through, you know, that creative and that strategy application that delivers those results? Because at the end of the day, whether you're in-house or you're an agency or you're a not-for-profit, you know, spending valuable resources on something, can you deliver those results in a way that's strategic and measured? And I think, you know, for me, you know, that was even the feedback on this campaign, which was outstanding. But there was always that line, you know, you could have had stronger KPIs. And absolutely, you know, that's always a place where you can improve. But I think, to your point, this was a new relationship. And I think whether or not we had won awards, and it's wonderful to win awards, I think we were able to work with Jocelyn to serve her audiences, but also build that relationship on trust and establish that for anybody doing that work in Indigenous space or with any equity-seeking communities. There is a humility that you have to approach this work with, and you have to come in realizing I have a skill set that can help achieve these goals, but I'm by no means the expert in this community or with this audience. And you really do have to come in and listen to those that that live and work with these audiences every day.
Yeah, I mean, I echo all of that, obviously. A campaign like this doesn't happen in isolation. You really do have to work. It's a true collaboration with your client. You have to listen. They know their audience. They know the people they want to reach and that. And, you know, our job is to help them make that connection. And also to Kim's point, I think that even filling out an awards entry is an opportunity to sort of reflect on what you can do or what you could have done differently or better in that. It's an opportunity to learn. So even as she said, if there's ones that you don't finish filling out, it's still worth looking at because it gives you that opportunity to really reflect on things that maybe sometimes we don't take that time or not the same kind of time that we should.
Yeah. That's good. That's a great point. I have one last question for all of you. We ask this to everyone for the Podcatalyst podcast. Initially, we're going to ask people like, well, you know, what keeps you up at night? Because it seems far too negative. So we ask what gets you up in the morning. So what gets you up in the morning?
Actually, could I just mention a couple of things?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
So I think one of the unexpected successes of this program or this initiative was just the way that we were invited to other tables. So the communications part, like Kim was mentioning, there's the KPIs, there's the campaign itself. But for us, after the campaign was over, we got invited to sit at other tables with the federal government, with national partners, and we were able to elevate the needs of a population that has very unique needs and that we're experiencing a gap in supports at the time. So while the campaign was directed towards our people and ensuring that they had good information, we also spent a lot of time curating a resource list of trusted sources of information that people could go to. But because of that, other people took notes. So decision makers, policymakers, and we were actually invited to sit at other leadership tables to help guide and direct the COVID response on a broader scale. And that even translated into assisting when we started doing some of the vaccine rollout supports. So I think that's a really important thing is that there's the campaign itself, but as the partner, as the people who have the responsibility and accountability to community, that was a bigger piece that we didn't foresee. We had maybe hoped to have a bit more of a say, but that was a really big piece that helped get us into those decision-making tables. And then we're now looking at a second phase of the campaign, which is before the first one was take care in COVID. Now we're looking at take action in COVID, which is more around the vaccine uptake and providing, dispelling myths and providing information around vaccines. So we have, again, on the advice of Dr. Janet Smiley, people kept talking about hesitancy, vaccine hesitancy. Why are people hesitant? And we were saying, well, it actually is probably more like a systemic barrier that why don't people feel like they have proper access to a vaccine? And so that's coloring our messaging, right? Again, coming from community about it's not vaccine hesitancy for a lot of our people. It's how accessible is the vaccine, even though it might be available within a local neighborhood. There are layers of systemic racism. There are layers of systemic barriers that also fold into how and why a person will be able to access the vaccine and actually take up a vaccine. And so a lot of our communities, we've really been able to push to ensure that the communities that we serve are served by our own people in accessing the vaccine, which is also reducing barriers. So yeah, I think those are just sort of like the other aspects of the campaign that you might not just see on the surface from the success itself.
Yeah. So beyond just the campaign itself, it's created a number of different opportunities and created this momentum for other initiatives. That's awesome.
Exactly. And so for what gets me up in the morning, I think there were many sleepless nights last year where I was just racking my brain about how do I do this? How do I get resources to community? So I don't even know if I slept enough to wake up in the morning, but I always talk about how I feel so grateful that I get to work with the network that I do, which are the leaders in the Friendship Center movement These are people that were going day and night to find ways to meet the needs of their community members. They were going above and beyond, cooking meals in their own homes, making sure people had food and shelter, advocating. And I felt like my efforts only matched those of the ones that were on the ground doing the frontline work. So that really is what got me up in the morning, is knowing that these folks weren't quitting and I couldn't quit because I needed to be the one that helped them. We often talk about our work as helping the helpers, and we really did our best to make sure that those helpers had everything that they needed to support community, to work with community, and ultimately keep people safer. And I know that many of our efforts help save a lot of lives. So that's really what got me up over this last year.
Yeah. Those are all good reasons to get up. Thank you. Darren, Kim?
Honestly, for me, it's the work itself. We do so many things in terms of social change and health promotion. I've been working in social change side of things for a long time now. And it's, as I've gotten older, it just becomes more important and more meaningful to me. Just knowing that you are contributing something positive and working towards a positive change with so many other people. Like, it's inspiring to be working with both the clients and then the people at Argyle who kind of share that same passion and that drive. That's what gets me going. It's just being, hopefully, a positive force in the world, or at least contributing to that.
Yeah, I think it's that being able to, you know, dive into a challenge like that and pick it apart and then really find out how that intersection of, you know, engagement, relationships and communication and connection, how you can create that in a way that helps an organization meet that challenge and achieve what they need to achieve. And I think that can be, you know, something as, you know, urgent and meaningful as the Association of Friendship Centers, or, you know, even in some of the engagement work we do, so that, you know, governments and policymakers have the benefit of input from those people impacted by those decisions before they make those decisions. So I think it's that challenge and that ability to dive in, and on any day, on any call, you're working with a different mix of colleagues across the country with a different mix of skill sets. But I think what unites the team is, you know, that passion and the excitement about picking that challenge apart and finding a strategy that will help us overcome it.
Jocelyn and Kim are far more eloquent than I am. That's why I'm a writer, not a talker.
Well, you all had fantastic answers, so far better than me. Well, I really, really appreciate your time and just sharing about this really important campaign and all the work that you do. And obviously, congratulations on receiving the award. And thank you again, Jocelyn, Kim, and Darren. Really, really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Thanks for your time. We look forward
forward
to hearing the podcast.
Thanks again to Jocelyn, Kim, and Darren. It was really a pleasure speaking with them, and the work that they've done is truly inspiring and important and impactful. So thanks to them. And we will have more Pod Catalyst episodes in September. And thank you so much for listening.